It's time for JT the Brick.
The Raider offseason is about content that is productive.
Shotgun to O'Connell. Backpedaling, lobbing to the end zone, trying to get at him. Makes the grab! Touchdown, Raiders!
I thought Aiden O'Connell played pretty well last year. He's a quarterback who's serviceable.
Now pressure. Gets out of there. Crosby's got it from behind! Back at the 45-yard line!
There's no better player who plays with heart and passion and speed than Mad Max Crosby. Wait till you see him this upcoming season.
JT the Brick.
Dodd to throw. Spillane on the blitz, and he wraps him up and holds him up for a sack.
I love the addition of Jack Jones. All the plays he made last year will be a great addition for this team moving forward.
Intercepted down the sideline. Intercepted Jack Jones, and he walks in. Touchdown.
And now.
All right, now we're good. Let's get to it.
Here's JT the Brick.
Yes, hour number two. We're starting to do some two-hour live streams here on YouTube. JT the Brick YT, the flagship. You can listen on the mobile app, which is fantastic. You can listen in Vegas on 920 AM. And everything is up and living at LVSportsNetwork.com as the new app is there. This is our summer series. Last year, it was the greatest Raiders roster of all time. And now we're doing the top 10 games in Raider history. So what we're trying to do here is teach you about the old days of the Raiders or maybe some great games from back in the day. We're not claiming to know more than you. We are not. We're claiming to put something out there that will give you an opportunity to participate, have some entertaining sound bites from back in the day to listen to, and maybe stoke your memory of some years where you as a Raider fan remember this. You might have been watching the game with your dad or your grandfather. You might remember the game because you're at Ricky's in San Leandro, the great sports bar. You might have just remembered it because you just saw it. You remember it on SportsCenter that night. We're trying to tell stories here. Some days are easier than others. I think this is good content. We'd like to hear from you on that if you're a Raider fan. And understand that the history of the Raiders is a living history. From Mrs. Davis lighting the torch when no one was in the building, to COVID, to Vegas, to the all-time scoring record of 63 points, to games in Oakland, games in Los Angeles, and most importantly, the Super Bowls that were played at the Rose Bowl and in Tampa, and New Orleans. They're clearly going to be in the top 10. I think you know that by now. But the reason why we're having the honorable mentions and we're trying to knock as many out as we can, because there's a lot of them. We just did the Holy Roller last hour on Dave Casper picking up the ball that was thrown forward. It would be illegal today. Now it wouldn't work. Stabler throws the ball forward. And Bobby, let's play that final call if we can one more time for those who are joining us late. I consider this 2 1-hour radio shows. We do the first hour, we reset at the top of the second hour. This is Bill King on the final call of the Holy Roller.
The outside man, that's the way they did it, and it paid off for him. 10 seconds left. Koletnikoff out. Bradshaw in, the ball on the 14. Oakland trails 20-14. Crowd takes up a chant of defense. Robisky and Banaszak in the back. Slot right. Branch inside. Bradshaw. Sabre back. Here comes the rush. He sidesteps. Then he throws. He passed. The ball slipped forward. Is loose. A wild scramble. 2 seconds on the clock. Both were grabbing the ball. It is rolled. A fumble. Casper is recovered in the end zone. The Oakland Raiders have scored on the most genius, unbelievable, absolutely impossible dream of a play. Stabler, while being hit, the ball squirted forward. Madden is on the field. He wants to know if it's real. They said yes. Get your big butt out of here. He does.
Incredible. One of the greatest. Now, where would you put that on the all-time play-by-play calls? Raiders have had some great play-by-play voices. Bill King, obviously, on the Mount Rushmore as the best, I believe. Most Raider fans do. That was one of his best calls. Imagine calling that play as a play-by-play voice in real time. Goodbye. Check out. How do you do it? You don't know what's happening. Ball comes forward. It's out. Banaszak goes to get it. Kicks it forward. Casper. Everything that happens there, just amazing. Truly amazing call. And this is great, too, because Bobby has pulled this. We've gotten a little bit of help from the Raiders, which we greatly appreciate. But these are all rejoins that we're going to have going forward now. One of the great things about this project, our summer series here, is we're going to have all this sound to play, you know, during the season. I might come out with the Holy Roller on a Tuesday, trying to get people fired up heading into the Charger game. So that's great. Now we go to our second game of the day. Let's get to that on the all-time greatest games, the rejoin, as we kick off hour number two.
We now present the Raiders' top 10 games of all time.
And the Raiders have won the Super Bowl championship. They are the world champs.
The history of the Raiders.
He is going to get inside the five, touchdown.
The games that helped make the Raiders one of the most recognized franchises in NFL history.
Just win, baby.
The Raiders' top 10 games of all time begins now. Honorable mention.
All right, this is a really cool honorable mention. We go back to September 15th, 2002 against Pittsburgh. And why was this game so significant? Wow, we got a lot of sound from it because of how great the team played on both offense and defense. And the score, even though the Raiders won this game 30-17, Raiders could have put up 70 in this game. It was one of the best game plans I remember in my career hosting the pre- and post-game show. I'll never forget this one because how great the Raiders were in this game. Greatest games of all time. Some are saying, is it one of the most significant? Well, I don't know, most significant, but it was in during a season where the Raiders went to the Super Bowl. Did that help with that? Yes. It helped with that more so than a game where the Raiders might have only won six or seven games in a season, missed the playoffs, but played in a game. Raiders took on the Steelers in Pittsburgh on Sunday Night Football. Week two contest, Gannon and the Raiders continued what Tom Brady and the Patriots did week one and what the Bengals head coach, Dick LeBeau, started in week 16 of the 2001 season. And that was spread Pittsburgh's defense out as a means to neutralize its potent pass rush that recorded 55 sacks the year before. And that team, the Pittsburgh Steelers, went all the way to the title game of the AFC. The Raiders took it to the Steelers in that first appearance at Heinz Field in Pittsburgh, 30-17 in this game, primetime matchup. And how about this? Rich Gannon threw for 403 yards. And Terry Kirby returned to kickoff for a touchdown. Wide receiver Hall of Famer Jerry Rice caught 11 balls for 94 yards. This was the game where Rich Gannon went 43 of 64 for 403 yards and a touchdown, broke a number of Raider passing records, including passing attempts with 64. That was 59 with Todd Marinovich back in 92, and completions with 43. If you look at that, Gannon had 35 earlier in that. 43 completions in a football game. Gannon's 43 completions were the most in regulation and only two short of Drew Bledsoe's 1995 NFL record, which was set in an overtime game, and all that yardage was there. Those are all Oakland records now going forward. The Raiders rushed only 14 times and threw 41 times in the first half, including 30 of their first 32 offensive plays. Did you hear what I said? Let me repeat that in all-time great games. The Raiders threw it 41 times in the first half. 30 of the first 32 plays, the ball was in the air. The Raiders' defense forced five turnovers, including an NFL record-tying three fumble recoveries by who? Rod Woodson in that game. Unbelievable. Their second run of the game resulted in a 36-yard touchdown by Charlie Garner, who wasn't touched after breaking right through the line of scrimmage in that game. The Raiders opened with a 17-7 lead with Garner's TD, a 21-yard touchdown scoring play from Gannon to Jerry Porter and a Sebastian Janikowski 41-yard field goal. The Steelers got a field goal before halftime, making it 17-10 at intermission. All those stats that I told you, Raiders only had a touchdown lead. Janikowski hit a 45-yard field goal in the third quarter to take a 20-10 lead. Following a Raiders turnover, the Steelers cut the Raiders' lead to 20-17. But Terry Kirby answered, and the running back with the 96-yard kickoff return on the first play of the fourth quarter. And again, that pushed the lead to 10 points. Let me stop for a second at 27-17. This was a game where the Raiders had one of their greatest offensive games of all time, and they couldn't put the Steelers away. The Steelers were still that good, and a team that came off the title game here, and they were in the fight. Janikowski again hit another field goal, this time for 27 yards, to make the score 30-17. And it gave the Raiders their second win of the 2002 regular season. The score marked the second straight game that the Raiders had scored 30 points or more as the Silver and Black defeated the Seahawks 31-17 in the regular season opener. That was September 8th at the Coliseum. For the night, the great Rich Gannon completed 43 of a whopping 64 passes for 403 yards and averaged just below 6.3 yards per attempt, with the longest completion of only 34 yards. Rich Gannon went on to be named the NFL MVP of 2002 and led the Raiders to the franchise's fifth Super Bowl appearance. That is September 15th, 2002. Honorable mention for one of the greatest Raider games of all time. We begin with Garner. What a great player he was on this run.
Holy cow, running play. Charlie Garner.
Goodbye.
10-5 touchdown.
One of the things Charlie Garner has been accused of is hitting holes too quickly. You hit it too hard. You hit it too fast. Well, Bill Callahan decided that instead of asking Charlie Garner to change, we're going to ask the offensive line to block a little more quickly. It's a quick trap up the middle. Nice job by Barry Sims, number 65, and Matt Stinchcomb, number 74, the left tackle and the left guard.
Love Joe Theismann on that call. Oh, my God. That's so good. Another Bobby Jem pulling this one out. We get some Joe Theismann color commentary on this. Look, let me just tell you this about Rod Woodson. I know Rod well, and that's because of his years with the Raiders, not with Baltimore. Those years here, it was when he came to the Raiders. I've said this about Rod Woodson before and since, is one of the greatest signings in Raider history because they got a top 25 player of all time. Not top 50, not top 100. He's inside the top 25. As a punt returner, special teams, as a safety, as a cornerback. And Woodson was an integral part of that team that year. Here's the fumble recovery.
Cordell fumbles the snap from center, and the Raiders have it.
Rod Woodson.
Rod Woodson, the former Steeler, comes up with it. Cordell lost the handle on the snap.
Wow, Rod Woodson there. If you remember this game, good time to start dialing before Vinny Bonsignor, 702-365-9200. The legendary Gannon game against the Pittsburgh Steelers, and Rod Woodson showed up big. Jerry Porter was a hell of a player. I mean, a gifted athlete. Very strong player there. Some people thought he lived in the shadows of Tim Brown and Jerry Rice. Porter was an excellent player for the Raiders in the prime of his career.
Third and 10. Four-man rush. Gannon over the middle. Porter, touchdown. A strike from Gannon, 22 yards to Jerry Porter. And that's what he gives them in this offense, the chance to get a big play.
You know, when Bobby and I looked back at the highlights of this game and saw how great Gannon was in this game, I'm going to get to my thoughts on Gannon here at the end of these sound bites, but you want to talk about a decision to throw the ball and not run the ball? Where the hell's that been in Raider history since? Where the hell's that been in Raider history since 2002? I'm in 2024, where a head coach had the vision to go, no, this game plan, we're going to throw it 60 times. We have an advantage here. They're going up against Dick LeBeau, one of the greatest of all time. The only chance the Raiders had to win this game was to spread out Pittsburgh. Well, maybe that'll happen this year. Maybe a game plan for Luke Getsy will show up and say, the only way we're going to win this game is we got to spread them out and we got to throw. We got to throw and we got to open up and we got to throw it 30 times in the first half. I doubt it, but it worked for the Raiders here. And it was Rich Gannon. And Rich Gannon became an MVP, and this was a big part of it. Janikowski, what a player he was, giving him a 10-point lead with this 45-yarder.
45 yards for Janikowski, hooking it and got it in there. He's been good from 41 and 45.
You know, for Janikowski, when he came in, I read the card when he got drafted. I looked at it. I knew who he was. I was sitting outside the war room. I tell that story a lot. And if there's a Raiders Hall of Fame, which there hopefully will be someday, Janikowski will be there. He made a lot of kicks, a lot of big kicks, especially early in his career. This was early in his career when the Raiders needed Janikowski to finish off games and extend the lead. He was able to do this. How about this? Cordell Stewart for Pittsburgh at the time.
Cordell has missed his last five passes. He's 9 out of 20.
This will be the final play of the third quarter. Trying to scramble, then throws. Touchdown!
So that's really important, that play, because the next play, the immediate next play. So that was the end of the third quarter, and Cordell made one of the best throws he made, and that's to Hines Ward, who got him back into the game with a couple of touchdowns. So this felt like a typical Raider game at the time where the Raiders were in control, but you looked up at the scoreboard and said, how are the Raiders only up by three with all of the performances they put into this game? But here's the way they started on the next play to start the fourth quarter.
We have a three-point game between bitter and traditional rivals. Terry Kirby. Room to run up the middle. The kicker to beat. Now Townsend, the only one back, and Kirby. Touchdown.
There are no flags.
86 yards. Holy cow.
Well, we better get Gannon down there warming up again because he's not going to be out there for a while. Oh, look at this. Bill Cowher. You think there's steam coming out?
Look at Hines Ward. He can't believe it either.
Paul McGuire, AFL legend on the call. How great is this sound, man? This is just perfect to hear this here on a July day, to hear all this great sound from back in the day in a primetime game. Kirby puts up the Raiders 27-17. The game was in hand again. Once again, Rod Woodson coming through.
Stewart to throw on first down. Pump fake, then rifles it to Hines. Ward, he fumbles. The Raiders have it. Derek Gibson.
I'm going to tell you what.
Check it, it's Woodson, the former Steeler.
Charles Woodson nailed him. When Hines Ward catches this ball, watch how hard Charles Woodson, number 24, strips him. Here comes the catch. He's on the ground. Now watch this right arm. Bang! He just knocks the ball out.
A Charles Woodson hit and a Rod Woodson fumble recovery. Raiders, September 15, 2002, honorable mention of one of the greatest performances and greatest games of all time and significant in Raider history on a Super Bowl year where the Raiders set the tone in this great game. And again, Woodson again as this thing gets put on ice.
Cordell unloads. That's going to be intercepted. And a very smart play by Woodson. He just goes to the ground. Our final score, 30-17.
And another interception for the great Rod Woodson. So I'm happy we included this game. Why did we include this game? We scoured through the greatest games of all time, and we considered this an honorable mention because the Raiders went to 2-0, okay, on their way to going to 4-0. We'll get to that coming up here in a little bit, and that started the season. But I put an asterisk by this game, and I wanted to share that with you on why this is important going forward. Maybe we can learn from the past. Maybe we could look at this game and say this is what the Raiders need to do this year. As I looked at the storyline and we researched this, and the Raiders had a lot of information in their archives and history of this game, Tom Brady in week one did the same thing to the Steelers, who went to the AFC Championship the year before. And they decided to try something, and the Raiders saw it in their game plan. Bill Callahan saw it, and they decided to follow it up and do it here again. So isn't that cool? That's what I'm concerned about this year in week one and two. We play the Harbaugh brothers. Well, what gift they gave us in this great Gannon game was when the Raiders broke down film of Brady against the Steelers week one, the Raiders saw something in their preparation and said, we're going to let Rich throw it. Now, maybe they thought they were going to let Rich throw it 40 times. He completed 43 passes, 64 attempts total. That never happened again. And maybe never will happen again. But the Raiders understood the game plan, and they executed it. They had a quarterback. I'll make the comparison to Gardner Minshew, right? Gardner Minshew is more than a journeyman. Okay, Gannon was a journeyman. Gardner Minshew started and played a bunch here. And Gardner Minshew, could he have a game where he could go 43 or 64? Probably not. I don't see that happening, but maybe there's a game that if Aiden's playing or Gardner Minshew's playing in this game where the Raiders go, we found something, we saw something in a game previously against this opponent, and we're going to do the same thing. It was all about coaching. Raiders had really good coaching in that Super Bowl year. Remember, that was, when you look at the Callahan year, there were problems in the Super Bowl. They went with the Gruden playbook, and Gruden knew it. And that's a horrible way to lose the Super Bowl, by not changing the plays later on that year, by going with what John Gruden knew exactly what was going to happen. And that's part of Raider history here, no doubt. But I just think that this is an important game because the Raider defense forced 5 turnovers. Rod Woodson had one of his greatest games as a Hall of Famer. And Gannon, you can debate Gannon won the MVP in this game. Even though it was week 2, he put up such a big number that the MVP voters looked at it and said, wow, hey, not only are they going to end up winning the AFC Championship, not only are they going to have a great regular season, but let's go back to week 2 and see what Rich Gannon did in that game. I remember hosting the post-game show that night, and the phones were never more packed. Fans couldn't believe it, and Raider Nation believed in week 2 that they were going to the Super Bowl. Now, my memory goes back pretty far, but it gets a little bit fuzzy. I remember that game vividly because it was a primetime game. It was back east. I wasn't at the game. I was back west hosting the postgame show, and I remember vividly hosting that show and taking calls and how passionate fans were, and that was 22 years ago. 22 years ago, and I swear to you, I remember it vividly. I remember at one point during that postgame show that this is a Super Bowl team. This is a Super Bowl team. We don't have that feeling around here now. We don't have that feeling around here now. Part of my job is to get that feeling going. And now you got to dip the show in reality. And the only way the Raiders are going to have the feeling that they can win a Super Bowl again or have a great year this year is to play a game like that. That's my big takeaway today. That's my job today, was to play those sound bites that Bobby dug out and dug them out and to find a way to say, hey, how can we bring that forward? And I think that's my message to Luke Getsy. Find a game early in the season at the Chargers or at Baltimore where you go, let's just use this for example. Say it's the Baltimore game. Everyone's going to have the Raiders dead on arrival. Everyone, in regards to the national media. Maybe that's the game. You throw it 45 times. Maybe you look at their defense and you say their pass rush, our offensive line, or maybe that's the game where you say we're going to run it 35 times with Zeus. Find something that you believe is going to work in Henderson and use it in the game. And that, I can't find much of a better example than that, everybody. I got more games to get through. These are only our honorable mentions. Hope you enjoyed that one. Honorable mention, September 15th, 2002 versus Pittsburgh. And man, to hear the guys in the booth at that time, friend of the show, Paul McGuire, legend, and Joe Theismann, real good friend, on the call. I did not know that was coming. I did not know that that was coming there. That was fantastic overall. When we come back, let's get your reaction to one of these two games, man. We put a month of work into this. We gave you the Holy Roller and we gave you the Gannon game. Let's hear from some callers, 702-365-9200, and what those games meant to you. Brought to you by the DeCastaverde Law Group. Alex and Orlando DeCastaverde, they love this. They love this idea. Going back in Raider history, the history of the DeCastaverde Law Group, their father who built that firm with a great legacy that you can use today. If you get into an accident and are injured, call 702-222-9999. Vinny Bonsignor joins us next.
Third and 10. Four-man rush. Gannon over the middle. Porter, touchdown. A strike from Gannon, 22 yards to Jerry Porter. And that's what he gives them in this offense, the chance to get a big play.
Welcome back, everybody. Raider Nation Radio. This is pretty cool. I'm watching NFL Live on ESPN, and they're doing a whole feature on Devontae from this new Netflix series on the receivers, and they're showing some really cool access as Devontae's doing a media tour today, Bobby. It would have been a good day to get Devontae on today because he's on with ESPN. He was on with Up and Adams with Kate Adams today. And Devontae is live right now on NFL Live and promoting this event that he has coming up here, this show on Netflix. Vinny Bonsignore, always thrilling to talk to him, the great insider and our teammate here on Raider Nation Radio. Vinny, I got a lot to get to. Hope the summer's going well. What do you think of this heat, considering you're kind of a new resident to the Valley here, but have been through many hot days over your years from East Coast to Los Angeles?
Yeah, and by the way, Devontae was also on Skip Bayless and Keshawn Johnson earlier this morning.
Ooh.
So definitely making the rounds. It's funny because Ed Graney and I were talking about this at the beginning of minicamp, and it was really hot. It was like 95 degrees, and we were laughing because your body doesn't, you know, it takes a little while for your body to get used to the heat here. And at 95, it felt unbearable that particular day. But we both agreed, in a month and a half, 95 is going to be like jacket weather here, mm-hmm. you know, after a steady diet of triple digit heat. So I don't know, somehow, some way we get through it and we adapt and we get it figured out. That doesn't make it any more pleasant or anything like that. But you find yourself getting through it, and you find yourself doing what you have to do as necessary, staying hydrated, using the air conditioner, you know, strategically at your house and in your car, and somehow, some way, getting through it. And there's probably about over halfway through, I would say, mm-hmm. hopefully, of the real intense heat. So we're going to go to California for a couple of weeks for training camp. We'll be able to dodge a little bit of a bullet there. But, you know, once we get back, it'll be closing in on September and it'll start becoming more bearable.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think I'm embracing it more and more. It makes sense. You used the term dodging the bullet. You know, I've been living out here a long time, and it doesn't mean any disrespect to Raider fans in Vegas or that beautiful practice facility and the indoor facility. It's just a good way to break up this heat from the players mentally, let alone physically out there. These are guys that go home afterwards with their families in this heat, and they've been dealing with the heat now on their vacations. I hope many of the guys are on vacation before they come back, but overall, it's only going to help the mental mindset and the physical capabilities of this team to play in cooler weather. Would you agree?
Yeah, and, you know, for those of us who played any level of football, let's say, you know, through high school, which is what I did, and I think your sons did, I think you did. It's a, wherever you are, and I was in Ventura, California, and it was pleasant. It's going to be training camp, hell week we used to call it back in the day, and training camp was tough. It was a mental challenge, regardless of the weather. But when you at least have decent weather, you're just battling the normal things that you have to battle, you know, retention in terms of what you're learning and then what you're applying on the field, competing with your fellow players, you know, whether it's on your side of the ball or the other side of the ball. It's a mental challenge. And then when you throw in here in Las Vegas the fact that there are days where it's triple-digit heat out there, mm-hmm. and, you know, when we're out on the sidelines carrying our clipboards and taking notes and shooting video and all that good stuff, it could be a challenge for us. And I always put myself in the player's shoes, and I'm like, man, imagine being out there fully padded, trying to get through the daily grind of training camp, which is hectic enough mm-hmm. and challenging enough as it is, but then also telling yourself, convincing yourself throughout the course of practice that I could deal with this heat. I could deal with this heat. It's one other thing that you have to be focused on that takes you a little bit of away from the work at hand. And I think in California, where I checked an average high in Costa Mesa, that time of year can be around 79, 80 degrees, mm-hmm. as opposed to double digit or triple digits here in Las Vegas. It's one less thing that they have to worry about, which creates, I think, a more conducive place to get your work in. It doesn't mean they're going to be winning more games this year or anything like that, but I do believe that not having to battle the heat on a daily basis makes for a better work environment.
Vinny Bonsignore joins us. So before you came on, as I'm chronicling the Raiders' greatest games of all time this summer, they were in the honorable mention mode, and we went back to a game that the Raiders played against the Steelers in week 2 of 2002, and that was when they won the AFC Championship and went to the Super Bowl. And what jumps out at us, and I want to tie it into the team today, Gannon in that game was 43-64. For 403 yards in that game. Rod Woodson had a massive game on the defensive side. But here's what I'm thinking, Vinny, and I might be reaching, and if I am, I am. But no one thought that the Raiders could put the ball up, especially Gannon, that many times in a game, let alone complete that many passes, which were franchise record. And I just thought that they saw something in week one that Brady did to the Steelers. They embraced it, and they came in with a game plan where the Steelers weren't prepared for. They weren't prepared for Gannon to throw it over 30 times in the first half of that game. And that's all on coaching. The players don't make the game plan. Bill Callahan and his staff did in that game. And I would hope that Lou Getsy and the coaches here look at a particular game plan this year, and they go off the grid. They do something unique. They say, hey, this is the game where we can run it with Zeus 30 times, or maybe a game we can put it in the air 40 times. Do you think they'll embrace that with this offensive coordinator?
Yeah, and, you know, Luke Getsy kind of showed that to everybody when the Raiders played in Chicago last year. And then the Bears, I mean, it was a little bit by circumstance because they had to play their backup quarterback to Justin Fields in that game. But the Bears offense that particular day didn't look like the Bears offense under Justin Fields, you know, previously. So the Raiders, you know, kind of got caught with their pants down a little bit. And that's what you have to do every once in a while. I remember talking to a defensive coordinator for an NFL team, and they were getting ready to play the Patriots the following week. So that particular week, the Patriots went out and spread it out and threw like 45 times and beat an opponent, you know, going up and down the field, basically just going four wide receivers and picking them apart up and down the field. And so that defensive coordinator set his defense for that type of offense the following week. And lo and behold, the Patriots came out in a run set power offense and ran it like 14 straight times to start the game up 21 before you could blink an eye. So you have to do that every once in a while. You have to sometimes, you know, obviously it's about playing to your strengths and doing what you feel like your personnel allows you to do. But then you also have to take a look at the opponent and what they might be planning for, or what they might be expecting. And every once in a while, try to throw a bit of a curveball. And I think Luke Getsy has that ability.
Vinny Bonsignor joins us. What are you making out of this picture of Zamir White that everybody's talking about now? He looks like he's a defensive tackle. He's a monster. His biceps are bigger than any other running back in football. That's not even close. And how advantageous could this be to the Raiders? Could it be he looks too big, if that's a thing? Does this make you think differently of him around the goal line and the ability to break plays and run? I'm sure you saw the picture. A lot of Raider Nation's talking about it.
Yeah, sometimes, you know, the angle and all of that can distort things. But suffice to say, Zamir White is a big dude, and he's a physical dude. And anyone that stood up next to him, and we have many times, he's country strong and country big. And this is a guy that I think is getting prepared to be the down in and down out back for 17 games, and then some, if the Raiders are able to make the playoffs. And I think, you know, this year, as opposed to his first couple of years in the NFL, he has to prepare, you know, with that in the mind, because he is the starting running back, and it is his job now to be the, you know, the bell cow. I don't know if it's going to be 25, 30 times a game that he's running the ball, but I would expect that he's going to be hovering around 20 per game, and I think he's built like that, and I think he's preparing like that. I don't think he's quite as big as it looked like in the picture, but he is a big physical dude. And I think that's kind of perfect for what the Raiders want to do this year, hanging their hat on the run game.
Vinny, who do you think the national media is forgetting about more, the Raider quarterbacks or Zamir White?
Yeah, I think probably the running game. It's easy to say, oh, they don't have Josh Jacobs anymore. That's a downgrade. I think what we saw from Zamir White over the last four games of the year, I mean, it wasn't a massive sample size, but it was enough. It was four straight games that he was, you know, punishing opponents. And in a couple of those games, going over 100 yards. And in one of those games, sealing the deal with a long run. At the end of the game, when everyone else was tired and he was out there running over people and running past people. So I think it was enough of a sample size for the Raiders and those of us that cover the Raiders to think that there might be some people that are sleeping on Zamir White this year.
I agree. I think that's one of the things that when I see grades and hierarchies and top teams, no one's given the Raiders an opportunity really to run the ball consistently. I think everybody's seen Zamir White. If you didn't see him play at Georgia, then you're not doing your job. People know that he played for a big-time program. But I also think part of it has to do with Brock Bowers and Michael Mayer getting a lot of attention, which they deserve, which is not getting the quarterback's attention. It's about Brock and Big Mike, and then Alexander Mattison and Zamir White aren't making it onto NFL Live. They're not on NFL Network. Questions aren't being asked today to Devontae about the running game, where maybe they would have, as you said, if Josh Jacobs was there, and maybe that position could be a sleeper group this year that could close out games, Vinny. I'm just talking about games that are 17-17 with under 4 minutes to go. If Zamir White and Christian Wilkins both make plays, Zamir runs on a 3rd and 6 and picks up a first down to end a game, or Christian Wilkins gets a strip sack to get the ball back to the offense to win the game, it's hard to account for that if you're the NFL media. You have to see it first.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that also the offensive line and how the Raiders want to play along the offensive line. We didn't get a chance to see that during OTAs and minicamp. There's no pads, so it kind of is what it is. But I expect an extremely physical training camp in Costa Mesa, and I expect this offensive line, especially the way the Raiders envision it with Thayer Munford at right tackle, Dylan Parham at right guard, and the youngster Jackson Powers Johnson over at left guard. I think this is a big, strong, physical, athletic offensive line. It might not be getting all the headlines. Mm-hmm. It might not be a top offensive line or a top 10 NFL offensive line, but I do believe it could be a top 13-12 offensive line in the league. And if it is, then, you know, that plays into what you're saying with the running game, because I think that that's what Antonio Pierce really wants to kind of hang his hat on, be the foundation of this offense, and then you throw off of the success that you're having running the ball. So that's another area of the team that I think that people might not be, you know, focusing in on as much. But I think that this offensive line has a chance to, whether it's perception or narrative, change that by midway through the season. And I think people are going to see, like, this is a better offensive line than some people expected.
Yeah, real quick one to follow up on that, Vinny. I'm hoping it's a physical camp. I've been around this team a long time, and just the camps haven't been as physical, not because of the Raiders wanting it. It's just the rules around the NFL. Non-padded practices, days off, whatever you can do. I just hope, and I think it's going to happen. I don't know it to be accurate, but I'm hoping that the Raiders have more physical days that are a little bit more intense at this particular camp under Antonio Pierce to get them ready for the Harbaugh brothers in week 1 and 2. I think it's going to be important to be physically prepared to play the Charger defense and the Raider defense in those first 2 weeks.
Yeah, and I don't care what anybody says, I do believe that whether the Raiders are in their first 4 training camps with the Las Vegas Raiders, played a little bit of a role in not being able to necessarily do that, not being able to be as physical as maybe John Gruden wanted him to be or Josh McDaniels wanted him to be, because you had to think about that heat and the wear and tear and what it and yeah. just the – you know, not the danger, I shouldn't say danger or anything like that, but just it was a factor. And I think that a better, you know, weather work environment is going to give Antonio Pierce a little bit more confidence that you can unleash a little bit more from a physical standpoint. I would expect to see that.
Yeah, Bobby, we'll say goodbye to Vinny there. His phone's cutting out at the end, and I'll promote what Vinny's doing at La Casa with this tequila and everything that Vinny's able to do there. Vinny Bonson, you're a valuable teammate here on Raider Nation Radio, and we thank him for coming on. And again, Vinny's proud partners are a part of that segment. We want to make sure they get their due here. And appreciate Vinny on that. And we'll just end it at that on the physicality of what they can do. What he said at the end was really important on John Gruden and Josh McDaniels were old, hardcore offensive coordinator head coaches. They wanted to be physical. Josh McDaniels, unfortunately, it didn't work. He didn't connect with the players the way he wanted to. He didn't. And, you know, he had a chance to do that. And it didn't. It was hard. It was much more critiques than typically. The players didn't love that. Gruden was hard on the players when he had to be. Very hard. Very hard on the players when he had to be. And I think Antonio Pierce is a player's coach, you know, a player's coach that is going to listen to his players and captains, going to listen to his coaches, Joe Philbin, former head coach, Marvin Lewis, former head coach. And they're going to put together a game plan that they believe will keep the team fit while also working them hard so they're able to play at their best. For me, this is a marathon, not a sprint, but the first 2 games are extremely important. Now, if Carolina was in the first 2 games, I'd say, okay, we're going to split. We should beat Carolina. If I can't sit in this studio and say we're going to beat Carolina, then I shouldn't be sitting in the studio. I'm not saying it's a guarantee. There's no guarantee. Carolina could be the most improved team in football this year. Could be. But my point is, the first two games are really important because the Raiders have a better roster than the Chargers, but they're on the road. But it's a home game on the road. Okay, so that's going to be an important game. I'm treating it like the Super Bowl. I am. You don't have to. I am. Then the game at the Ravens, no one's going to give the Raiders a chance. Nobody. I mean nobody is going to give them a chance. And that's why I wanted to include this game as an honorable mention today, where I think the coaching could make a difference. And John Harbaugh is a good coach. He's won a Super Bowl. He'll be prepared for whatever Antonio Pierce brings to Baltimore. But maybe something a little bit quirky, a little bit different in that game could keep the Raiders in the game with an opportunity to keep Lamar Jackson on the sideline. Hey, I'll just tell you this, not from my perspective. A lot of work today for Bobby to get this show together. Give him a round of applause as we take a look at everything we've tried to do today. It's a lot of work to get these sound bites in and cover these two games. We got two new games coming up on Thursday. We're off tomorrow for Triple A baseball. Okay? And then we'll come back and do this on Thursday and on Friday. JT, we want to thank all of our proud partners. And how can we not forget one of the great ones? M Resort Spa and Casino, the official resort hotel casino of the Silver and Black.
Judge drives it. Center field. Kiermaier back onto the track. Gives it a look at the wall. It is gone. Goodbye. It's 2-0 Bombers.
Well, my Bombers aren't making me happy this year. As a Yankee fan, I am cranky, cranky Yankee. Man, it's tough to watch the Yankees. People, I've been doing a lot of that lately. I don't do it a lot on this platform because there's the Raider Nation Radio. I feel like I have handcuffs on when I talk about the Yankees because I'd like to talk about the Yankees more. We gave you almost 2 hours of Raider content today on the greatest games. So I don't bury people with my cranky Yankee on this platform, but I don't enjoy watching my – they got 55 wins, I think, maybe 50. They got a lot of wins, and most of them were early in the year against really bad teams. And every time they lose, I feel like the season's over. I'm in one of those ruts where every time I watch a Yankee game and they lose – I feel like it's the end of the year. They're going from the best record in baseball to the second wild card before the All-Star break. I mean, they should have had a 10-game lead and the one seed and then whatever. Now, they're throwing it away in about a month. That's what happens in baseball. Baseball's long. It's hard. It's just monotonous. We played you the Devontae Adams sound and everything that's happening there, and I wanted to get to Keegan Bradley. He was chosen as Ryder Cup captain. And this is a big thing. The Ryder Cup, we got to beat Europe. Europe just kicked our ass in Rome badly. And I hope Keegan Bradley is able to turn it around.
I didn't have one conversation with anybody about this until I was told I was the captain. I got a call from Seth and John and Zach. And I had trouble. When they called me, I felt funny after the call because I don't think I reacted in the way that they were expecting me to. I was in complete shock, and it was heavy. Like I said earlier, I was a little bit uncomfortable with some of the guys of my my idols that were looked over for this position, and I needed a second to figure that out. And it was, again, I don't think I'll ever have a bigger surprise in my life, but something Seth said to me was, your number was called, it's time for you to step up. And when he told me that, it sort of hit me, that this is a heavy job, and this is a group of people that trusted me in this, and it's time to step up to the plate and be the captain of this team.
All right, so that's an important soundbite for me because a couple of reasons. I take American golf really seriously. I root against the foreign soil. I root against Rory McIlroy. I don't want to see Europeans winning championships on American soil. That's me. That's who I am. Because the Europeans love kicking our ass. They spray champagne all over our golf courses. If we don't win the Ryder Cup's going to be at Bethpage. That's where I grew up. I literally grew up walking distance from there. Our town that I grew up in Massapequa bordered it. And I grew up, on sleigh riding on that golf course because the golf course is insane. playing golf at some of the lesser courses there. Bethpage Black, they have a sign on it that warns you not to play if you're not a great golfer. There's a warning on the first tee box. It's that difficult. Anyway, if I was the captain of this team, this is going to rub people the wrong way, but it's true, I would ban the wives. And this is going to, you're either going to get this or not. These guys like Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas and Ricky Fowler all bring their wives, and their wives buy American dresses and American skirts, and they show up at every photo op, and they're on yachts together, and they're going to the Vatican together, and they're running around town. If I'm Keegan Bradley, I say, you know what? Let's calm down with the social media and the selfies and the wives. I don't want the wives on the golf cart. I don't want the wives sitting on the greenside bunker in between the ropes. Let's go play and kind of give the wives a shopping day in New York. Tighten this thing up. This group of guys now, Jordan Spieth and JT, the other JT and everybody, all they care about is showing up with their cool Ray-Bans on, their suit, and their wives at all these photo ops. I'd say this for the women. Women, leave your husbands at home. Men, leave your wives at home and go get the Ryder Cup back. Maybe Keegan Bradley will do that. Q's got a big show coming up next. We're off tomorrow for the Aviators. We'll be back on Thursday continuing with the greatest Raider games of all time.
Raiders! Appreciate it. Thank you, guys.